Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is The Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is The Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Compliance Guy. Today is Tuesday, the 10th of October, which means being a Tuesday, it is a hashtag Terry Tuesday with my very good friend, Terry Fletcher. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Well, you know, I'm good. And to each and every single one of y'all tuning in, logging on and hanging out with us around the country and around the world. Thank you so much for spending just a little bit of time with us. So, weekend was good. It was busy as normal. But I'm excited because my Dolphins put a beating on another team, which made me very happy.
Did you see what my Steelers did against the Ravens? And they had no chance to win. Okay, well, according to the pundits, but we don't ever listen to them, do we?
No. But you know what's even better is the slide that Bill Belichick and the Patriots are on.
Oh, man.
After 2 decades, man. It's just like, you know what? It's finally good to see that a new king will be crowned.
Well, I do. You know, I do an NFL podcast, which I record today, and I mentioned that he has been outscored in the last 2 games, 72-3.
Yeah. And I think everyone's looking at it and going, you know what?
Tom is pretty good.
It really had to be Tom Brady.
Yeah.
It really had to be Tom Brady and Gronkowski and all these others. All right. So before we send folks into a tizzy who
Sorry, we had to chat about football. Yeah. I know.
Let's go ahead and jump into something that's just as interesting as football.
Oh, yeah.
And that's revenue cycle management.
We haven't really tackled this topic much. So, you know, it's I think you and I have had some frustrations lately on different coverages and how people are handling things from revenue, or I'm sorry, from incident to billing to shared visits to weird things like, you know, medical or what is it? Nutritional therapy. Yeah. Medical nutritional therapy to just even certain procedures. It's kind of frustrating because I feel like a lot of staff members, and I'm going to collectively say the revenue cycle management team, that means coders, billers, administrators, collectors, people who handle appeals and collections. But I you know, and I do a lot of webinars on this. I feel like nobody starts at the front desk or starts at the phone call of the patient first, you know, access to the practice. They wait until after everything's billed and say, well, let's see if we can get it paid now. And Sean, that's not the way to do things, because with AI and with automation and digital, jobs are going to be eliminated if people keep trying to chase money instead of, you know, ensure that that reimbursement's coming in.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Listen, you know, it is a continuous battle where we have folks reaching out on a daily basis, asking questions about things like what you just brought up, incident to billing services. The problem that we have, at least the problem that I have, is that there's competing guidance out there from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, right? Because the first document or guidance document that you have is the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual, which is also known as Publication 100-2, which is an online only reference for Medicare healthcare providers. Now, this is an official government document which details specific rules and regulations that govern the Medicare program.
But everybody always knows, I mean, not to make this a referendum on incident two, it's just there's always been Medicare and then everybody else, which, you know, is right. kind of some of the CPT guidelines. But I'm finding that in revenue cycle management, a lot of practices do not know what their policies and their contracts say that they signed. They some of them true. Say, we've never even seen a contract. I'm like, right. are you kidding?
But the second document that adds confusion to all of this is what we refer to as the Medicare Program Integrity Manual. And in the PIM, it contains the policies and responsibilities for contractors tasked with medical and payment review. So the question becomes, which document should providers follow? Do you follow the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual or do you follow the PIM? And some are going to say, well, the PIM is for contractors. Well, wait a minute. If it's for contractors, doesn't that specifically set the requirements for how services are supposed to be rendered, who can render them, the frequency to which they can render them, you know, documentation requirements, frequency of the services, you know, what to do in a dispute or if you have questions? So for me, what I look at oftentimes when I'm trying to figure out how to make heads or tails out of an allegation against the provider is to look at these two documents and to try to find contradictions in the guidance. And the funny thing is there's always contradictions
there's always that exist. Something. Yeah, there's always something.
But what makes it even worse is when you have the program directors at CMS in Baltimore actually coming out and saying, well, that's not exactly the spirit in which that policy was being written.
I see what that we all
actually wanted to say was blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, but if that's what you wanted to say, why didn't you say it?
Well, look
and
what
if
we've
you
been
didn't
dealing
say,
with.
Why don't you issue a revision?
Well, look what we've been dealing with the 25 modifier. I mean, that's been on the OIG watch list for what, since birth? I mean, since you and I've been around. And they sit there and they put it in their Medicare manual that says, you know, minor services, that's part of the pre and post work and you can't bill for it. You know, I'm trying to think of the exact language, I can pull it up, but basically you can't bill for an E&M on the same date. But then it says, however, even if you don't have different diagnoses, maybe you can. And people are like, okay, when can you? Because this isn't making sense. But then it goes on to say, even if it's a new patient, you shouldn't. But then again, in the next sentence, it says, but maybe you can. And all these maybes are really, it's just really frustrating. But the other thing that I'm finding that's really tough, and I feel bad actually for our RCM staff, and I'm sure some of them are listening to this thinking, yes, that happens to me. Not only do you have just physicians saying, well, I'm doing this, so you need to figure out how to get it paid when it's not payable, but now you've got mid-level providers. You've got, I mentioned, you know, medical nutritional therapy. You've got dietitians and nutritionists and audiologists and, you know, life coaches and all these people that think they've read a headline. They've clicked on something without reading the coverage details. And they're like, I should get paid for this because a code exists. Okay. Okay, people. Just because
I'm entitled to be paid for this.
I know. Just because a code exists doesn't make it payable. And the thing you have to think about is that maybe it is payable, but because there's only one pie to reimbursement, whether it be Medicare, whether it be United Healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, whatever, they cut up that pie and then they put restrictions on it. They say, oh yeah, okay, we'll cover it, but here's how we'll cover it. You have to have this diagnosis, or it can only be for this patient population, or your frequency can only be once every 6 months, or you only get 10 of those visits a year. And then they put out this one thing called MUEs, medically unlikely edits. That's how many times can you bill that CPT code per day? People who are in the integumentary system, the skin, and taking off lesions and, you know, and doing INDs and all kinds of biopsies. Think about a patient who's got to have biopsies all over their body, and it says that you're limited to 12, but they took off 40. Just because there's a code that exists, there's still payer guidelines around codes that if you're going to be successful in the revenue cycle management space, you have to know your payer guidelines. And as Sean said, there's Medicare, there's, and there's, different areas.
There's everybody else.
And like I said, everybody else. And everybody else means when somebody says, well, I'm having a problem with Blue Cross paying me. I said, well, let's look at the contract. Oh, I wouldn't even know where to find that. Well, what is their policy? I have no idea. I'm like, okay, guys aren't helping me. I need to know what you signed and what you agreed to before we can look at that. And they're like, well, we just know we keep getting denials. Okay, well, maybe it's not covered. Let's look. But I just don't like starting off with let's chase money instead of let's figure out if this is appropriate to bill, collect. And because I don't like revenue cycle management staff, what we call spinning your wheels. You know, it's frustrating. I see doctors all the time saying, just put a 59 modifier on it and it'll get paid. Oh my gosh. Not if you're unbundling, not if it's an occlusive code. For the longest time, a medial meniscectomy with a chondroplasty, for example, it was allowed back in the day. And then, they caught wind of it and said, well, let's just say with or without chondroplasty. So they combined the code. And I still have providers saying orthopedic space saying, well, if you put a 59, I'm like, no, it look. And they're like, well, this is not a Medicare patient. I'm like, it's CPT. It means anyone who uses this code. And if it's included in the code, look at the code descriptor. It says this is part of it. And they still try to say, well, I want a paid extra. I'm like, you can't have it. I'm not giving it to you. And so it's really tough when I think, and again, I appreciate our coders, our billers, our collecting staff, when they're trying their hardest to make sure that they've got a really good collection percentage from their AR, but then they've got money on the books that isn't necessarily collectible. Oh, and that's actually a good point to bring up, Sean, when we're talking about RCM. Did you see that listserv thing that came out yesterday on the NSCHBC where somebody said that a purchaser of a practice is suing the seller now because they feel they overstated what their practice was worth based on the AR. And after further investigation, they felt they were billing for things that weren't collectible.
So, there's something called due diligence. I know that's a term that eludes a lot of folks.
Yeah.
But look, I'm not being sarcastic and I'm not being snide, but I get very aggravated at lawsuits that are filed when it's the purchaser who is at fault. Now, if someone concealed a second set of books and as a purchaser, you relied on what was given to you and those turn out to be bogus, well, then sure. You have every right to seek relief through the judicial system. However, if you, as part of an acquisition, fail to perform an independent objective audit using a third party that has no skin in the game to determine whether or not the documentation substantiates the services that were submitted for remuneration or whether or not the services actually were performed in accordance with generally accepted standards of medical practice, then that's on you. If you didn't do a forensic accounting of the services to ensure that the AR was realistic and that it was not overstated because people weren't taking write-offs either on the front end or the back end, or they weren't, making reasonable collection efforts against payers and or individuals who are cash pay, well, that's on you. We have a client, and I know it sounds like I'm angry, because I am. I'm so tired of our legal system being tied up in frivolous, nonsensical lawsuits. I have a client who, after making one mistake going through an acquisition of a group of providers, reached out and said, we will never do this again. We want doctors management and your team to perform the due diligence for all of the pending acquisitions that we have to help us and guide us through the process so that we're not making these same costly mistakes again. And do you know, we have assisted them through probably 14 or 15 acquisitions in their local community of all of these different physician groups. And of the 14 or 15 that we've done, we actually advised them that they should probably walk away from four or five of them because information was inconclusive or information was missing, or we found a pattern of behavior that called into question the moral aptitude or moral fortitude of the individuals at that location, and advised them that we did not believe that we could in good faith give a thumbs up or a green light to moving forward. And you know, after a period of time, I think of the four or five that we did, two of those groups actually were investigated by the government and one by a special investigative unit, and both of them were hit with significant fines. So revenue cycle management, while it's an operational component, compliance, auditing, coding, billing, all of that makes up RCM. And you can't ignore any one aspect of the RCM cycle, because if you do, it throws the entire thing off kilter. All right.
No,
sorry.
I agree.
Didn't mean to dominate that last 2 minutes. Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, it, you know, that's one thing that that I've noticed too, is that, and here we are, we're on the compliance guy. I don't think, you know, we talked about this, I think on the round table one time, but I don't think we've talked about it in hashtag Terry Tuesday. Compliance isn't just about back office. It isn't just about documentation for the physician. You know, it's not just about OSHA. It's also about having policies and procedures in place where if staff needs to know how to handle something, such as an appeal, such as intake for patients, things like that. We even talked about it in the cybersecurity sector. But in revenue cycle management, I don't see compliance programs either, where this is how we're going to, you know, deal with billing, coding, capture, collection. And just for the listeners out there, revenue cycle management starts at the phone call the patient makes to make an appointment. You have to get the correct information on the phone. You have to make sure they've got valid insurance. And if you don't have competent people, and I don't want to say front desk, I'm going to say the call center, because sometimes it's funneled into a different area, or even people who are handling some, you know, appointments that are taken via the website or, you know, any way you do it online, you're going to get bad information. You're going to get misinformation. You're going to get things that you can't use in the billing office. And you know what they say, and this is, I'm trying not to use profanity, but it rolls downhill. You know, once you have bad information, garbage, trash, whatever you want to call it, it rolls downhill right into the billing office. And now you're trying to figure out who's a subscriber, who's this. I mean, here's a true story. I had a hospital visit in June, as you know, and the person that intaked me, they had my driver's license and my insurance card in their pocket. And I think it was a nurse that kind of walked or, you know, followed around what we were doing. And then I said, okay, I need my insurance and stuff back. She goes, oh yeah. And then she took it out of her pocket, never handed it to the revenue cycle people apparently, because then I get a call the next day at home saying, we need your information. All we have is your first, last name and your date of birth. And I'm like, you did a CT scan yesterday. I was in overnight in the hospital. Are you telling me you have no way, you know? And then 2 weeks later, I get another call. We need your insurance information. I go, I give it to somebody and actually sent over everything. And they're like, oh, we can't find it. Well, since that time, and that's June, July, August, September, October now, I've never received a hospital bill, never received an EOB. I still don't know what's going on. So I called my insurance just to see. And I said, hey, has anything been submitted by this county hospital? And they're like, no. I'm like, what? And they're like, no, you were in the hospital? Now I'm changing insurances this fall. So, because I'm right now on my husband's Cobra, and then I'm changing over, and I'm just like, so there's a possibility that this is never going to get billed. I mean, and then the interesting part is one of the physicians that saw me, and I really believe I only saw, what are they called? Residents. I don't think I actually saw a physician that wasn't a resident. And I did get one EOB there for over $700 for, I don't know why, I was only there one day. And it said that they were not on my plan. Well, now we get No Surprise Act and everything. Well, so I call them and say, you know, I don't even know this doctor's name. They're like, well, let me see if I can find a doctor that is on your plan. I'll just bill it under that doctor. Oh my gosh, Sean. Oh my gosh. I'm like, this is how you handle your revenue cycle. And it's just a train wreck out there. Now, I think, honestly, I think private practice have a better way than hospitals. I think hospitals are just, I mean, they're always complaining about, I'm losing this money, I'm losing this money. And then you look at their processes and you're thinking, yeah, but this hand doesn't know what this hand is doing. And I think at least in a physician's practice, there's probably a little bit more tightening of the process. But there's such a there's such an administrative breakdown at the beginning that things that can be avoided if you just have the right information, right people. Think about this, and this is just a recommendation to our listeners. You need to have, let's say that you have a billing office, a central billing office that's offsite, but your medical clinic is, again, one location, and a lot of the central billing office offsite, or a lot of this now is remote. You need to still have, a liaison from the billing office in clinic, because doctors get trapped in their exam room with patients saying, oh, doc, you know, I can't afford to pay this today. And what the doctor's hearing is, or what they're thinking is, okay, today, don't worry about your copay. I'll talk to my staff. We're fine. What the patient hears is, you and I are on a first name basis now. You never have to pay your bill in here again. And if my staff tries to, you know, send you a statement, yell at them. That's not what happened. But so the doctors need to be able to have somebody they can pull in a room if somebody starts talking about money and saying, you know what, hold on that thought. They go to another room to see a patient and the liaison comes in. Or think about when you check out. So you've been to the doctor, you know, had your exam, maybe, you know, you did whatever you do, and then you're checking out and all they do is give you an insurance card. You have to ask them now, do you want my copay? Do you want this? I've rarely seen copays collected on the intake when you sign in anymore. They wait till you're out of there. And how many people say, oh, I don't have my wallet, or I didn't bring in that thing with me. And so it's important to really tighten those things up if you want to have successful revenue cycle management, you know, services in your office. Service is a bad word, but the reason is because we're taking a 3% hit on Medicare fee schedule next year. You know, look at the billions of dollars that the commercial plans have made in profits, and they're still cutting physician reimbursement. And so you have to hold on for dear life and get every cent you can, but make sure that you've got a very good workflow or very good policy, and that you start it when the patient first makes the appointment. And that's my diatribe for the day.
Listen, I have for years advocated that physicians do not engage in discussions about finances with patients, for the simple fact that it forever changes the physician-patient relationship. I have literally said to providers, if you will stay out of the business of medicine, I will gladly stay out of the clinical practice of medicine. You are creating a situation that is unmanageable. And once that line has been crossed, there's no going back. So I agree with you. All right. Anything else that you want to add? I think we've gotten our points across pretty clearly in this one, Terry.
Yeah, no, I think we did. Basically, start it before the claims go out and recognize that not everything's covered, and be strong enough, or have somebody who's strong enough from an administrative perspective, that when one of your clinicians brings to you and says, I should get paid for this, don't brush them off. Don't, you know, also don't accommodate. If you don't know, find the answer and then sit them down and say, okay, so here are the parameters. You know, if you want to get paid for this, this, these are the patient population that they allow. This is the diagnosis they allow. If you don't have that, and I'm not encouraging you to put that on every patient. I'm saying if they don't have that, then this will not be a paid service by insurance. They will be responsible. And so, you know, we would have to bill them and they would have to sign an agreement to be okay with that. So there has to be communication in that effect where you don't shut people down, but you let them know in writing, this is the situation, so that they understand that you are still doing your due diligence and finding out if things are covered, but you're not going to just, you know, throw spaghetti at the wall and hope something gets paid. I mean, you're involved in so many false claims that if you submit a claim in, you're expecting to get paid. That's supposed to be a clean claim. You checked your coverages. You're not just seeing if you can get around the system. And we really hope that that's not something you're doing in your practices.
All right. Well said. So that's going to bring us to the end of this episode of The Compliance Guy. Before we leave, I do want to say something that is on my mind. And again, this is not political commentary. This is not a political show, but I am going to speak my mind on this because it is my program. And Terry, you're more than free to engage in this discussion as well. I want to send my well wishes and my thoughts and prayers out to all of those innocent civilians who have been caught up in the latest Israeli-Palestinian conflict. This is a conflict that is so unfortunate. It happened on a high holiday for the Jewish community, which is in and of itself a travesty. Irrespective of what the disputes are, violence is never the answer. It is sometimes an end result. And Israel, at this point, is doing what it has to do to defend itself, its people, and to combat terrorism that has been launched against the state of Israel. My heart goes out to those innocent civilians who live in the Gaza Strip, who are of Palestinian descent. And I hope that at some point, the parties can come together and can come to a fair and absolute resolution. What I would say to our listeners is go and do your own independent research on this situation as well as any other situation. Stop listening to talking heads in the mainstream media, both on the left and right. Find your own answers to the truth based on factual reporting of what's going on here in this country and around the world. But again, as I said, from myself, and this has nothing to do with doctors' management, my partners, my employees, this is me, Sean Weiss, speaking my mind. I hope that we find peace and resolution to this unfortunate conflict that's going on right now. Terry, if you have anything that you want to say, feel free.
No, I just echo your thoughts, and our prayers are to the, you know, Israeli people and to people in the U.S. who have family under this tragedy. I feel very, very heartbroken for you. So hopefully peace can happen soon, but we're just very sad at the events of late.
Absolutely. All right. That's going to bring us to the end of this episode of The Compliance Guy, our hashtag Terry Tuesday episode, where we got an opportunity to explore all things revenue cycle management tied to compliance. So on behalf of my very good friend, Terry Fletcher, and myself, thank you all so much for tuning in, logging on, and hanging out with us. I'll be back later this week with another episode of The Compliance Guy. So until then, remember, be good to yourself, but more importantly, y'all be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media at The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.